My guest today is my colleague, Dr. Tracy Erfling, and we're going to be talking about reproductive health and contraception and some advances and new ideas out there and some very tried and true ideas out there. So welcome to the show.
Thanks, Allie. Yeah. I wanted to say the last time I did this show was with Anne Goldin, and so I just have to take a moment just to honor Anne because I miss her, and she did such a lovely job hosting this show for many, many years.
Yes, and the spirit of her, I feel like, is always in this room with me when I sit here and do the show.
For sure.
I feel like Anne is sitting behind all the dials that I'm not capable of sitting behind.
Yes, she's a lovely spirit. We
yes,
miss her.
Yes, I do miss her. So tell us, before we get started, I just want to take a minute to all of our listeners and say that we're going to be talking a lot about reproductive health and about contraception, but really, no matter what gender you identify as, we're just talking about the factory of the uterus and making hormones.
Yeah, so we might be using some pronouns, but they're really just, they're going to align with the body parts, basically, that are congruous with what we're talking about in contraception.
Exactly, and just take whatever rings true to you in how you identify and what body parts you have and use it or leave it behind.
Yeah, yes. Fair enough, I like that.
Yes. So before we get started, tell us a little bit just about what you do in the community mm-hmm. and the kind of couple hats that you wear. Mm-hmm.
So I am a naturopathic physician, like Allie, and I've been in Astoria practicing since 2001. I have a private practice, which it's kind of phasing down. I'm sort of letting my practice die, sort of a lovely little natural death. And as much as I love being a doctor, I'm sort of not loving running a business. And so I'm going to just stick with my contraceptive work at the health department. So also since 2001, I've been working at the Clatsop County Health Department. We're located on Exchange and 8th Street in the big county buildings. We're in Suite 100. And so that's, you know, a paycheck job, which is kind of nice to be able to just
yes.
show up and do the work that
yes.
I've been trained to do. And I've always focused there on contraceptive health. We have a family planning clinic, which is funded from a variety of sources. And that is where we kind of do our services for the community.
And who is welcome to go to the clinic?
Yeah.
Who,
so yeah. I think in the past, when before the Obamacare, the American Care Act, we were seeing a far greater source of low-income individuals. But now, since so many more people are insured, a lot of times they're getting contraceptive care through their primary care, which is fine. But we serve community of people that don't have insurance, that do have like Oregon Health Plan or any kind of Medicaid, as well as people with private insurance. So some people think that after they have insurance, they can't come to the health department anymore, but that's not true. We certainly can bill insurance. So if you've loved coming there or have gone in the past and would like to come back, we welcome really anybody.
And is there an age range?
Nope. I mean, I guess I should say there are people that are in need of contraception, right? So you have to be within reproductive age. So
yes.
when people are in their, you know, early 50s, we start sort of having the conversation of transitioning them back to a primary care physician or somebody that will take care of their needs once they are no longer able to procreate.
Yes, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And just a quick idea before we launch into talking about some of the contraceptive methods and ways that people can kind of control their reproduction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just to say that I think you have similar belief, just really believe in informed care mm-hmm. and in empowering people to make their own decisions. So providing this full spectrum of here's all the options out there. Here's the pros and cons. Here's what you can do. And then letting people choose whether it's never to use contraception, whether it's to always use contraception,
right.
whether it's to never have a period, whether it's to always just really honoring the ability of people to have their own autonomy.
Absolutely. And
yeah.
I think that when you come to the health department, even though our clinic is very specifically funded for contraceptive purposes, we certainly have sort of what we call full choices counseling. And it's very patient driven. And I think that the reason that there are so many different options is because there's going to be one that's right for you. And maybe that is abstinence, or maybe it is the fact that you're just going to, you know, be doing what we call fertility awareness method and just kind of watching your cycling. So it's really all over the board. And although primarily I'm prescribing things or doing things, you know, for the patients to give them some really reliable contraception, that those pieces can always be in the conversation.
Yeah. So let's start a little bit with just this idea of like why contraception
why
at all.
Doing this.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
When I go into the high schools, that's the first question I always ask the teens. Like, why are we talking about this? What's important about being...
And the teens say, just to make me embarrassed.
Well, usually when I ask, they say to prevent pregnancy, which is true. You know, that's kind of the purpose of contraception. But the thing that I think that people don't understand is that when we have the choice to either choose to or not to have children, or how far apart to have children, then we are much more successful in our stability, our financial success is higher, our educational success is higher, and our health is better. Mm-hmm. So when we're choosing to have a child at the time when it's really right, then I think things go a lot more smoothly. Kids are great. But an unintended pregnancy sometimes can be very rough on a person, no matter what their age.
Absolutely.
So I think we think about unintended pregnancies in teenagers, but an unintended pregnancy at 40 is also sometimes really traumatic for people.
Yeah.
So I think that
makes a lot of sense.
As we're living longer, as we're sexually active longer in our lives, it's just a topic that we just have available, and I think it's an important one to broach with any provider.
And that's a really interesting point, this idea of if you look at ancestrally where we came from, this fact that we had much shorter lifespans. So there was a lot shorter of a window where we needed to actually actively try not to have a child, mm-hmm. if we didn't want to. Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about a lot longer lifespans. Mm-hmm. And if you were to, let's say, not use any contraception whatsoever, you potentially could have, I don't know how many children that would be.
Yeah.
A lot.
I mean, we're getting our... As far as, you know, females, we're getting our periods younger.
Earlier,
you know,
yeah.
So like sometimes 10, 11 years old, and then maybe not ceasing having menstruations until, you know, early to mid 50s. So
that's right.
40 some years potentially
40 plus
of getting
years.
Pregnant.
And yeah.
I think that it's a really nice thing to feel like you have some control over that.
And do you think that statistic about women having a higher education and more success financially and all that, do you think it's because they're allowed to kind of go about that path, or do you think it also has to do with making empowered choice? And
well, I think that as we've looked at the history of contraception, I think that absolutely people that study this, you know, as sort of their research driven, will show that women have more success financially and in the workplace because of contraception. Absolutely.
Hmm. Has there been research done on men? I know contraception's very one-sided.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, sadly, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Possibly, I don't know.
So let's talk a little. We're going to go to fourth grade level for a minute, mm-hmm. and talk a little about how contraception even works and what it mm-hmm. is. And then we'll dive into some options that we want people to know about.
So basically, there's kind of like two basic ideas. There's a barrier. Mm-hmm. So that there's something that kind of gets between sperm and egg. And then there's hormones. And sometimes the hormones create the barrier, but those are kind of the two logistical ideas. So barriers are things like condoms, diaphragms. There's now these fem caps. There are things that kind of are placed either on the penis or in the vagina that really physically create a barrier.
Yeah.
Then there's also some hormonal methods that will create this kind of thick mucus at the opening of the cervix. And so that will basically create a barrier of mucus between the egg and the sperm.
Right.
And then there's hormonal methods that prevent ovulation. So basically the egg is never released, and therefore there can never be an interaction between the egg and the sperm. Yeah. Nothing is 100%. So there is no method out there that will guarantee you can't get pregnant. There's certainly some that are much better than others. And in general, anytime we're involving hormones in contraception, our rates of success are in the 99%+. But that also means you have to be using it correctly and blah, blah, blah. So.
Right, right. And what is the highest, what method is the highest efficacy just statistically?
Sterilization.
Oh,
so whether
whether
that's a woman getting her tubes tied or a man getting a vasectomy. That that's the highest. Although mm-hmm. it's still
not 100%, right?
100%, so
right. Yeah. And when we're talking about, just to give a little crash course in hormones, when we're talking about hormones, we're really talking about estrogen and progesterone,
correct?
For women that we're kind of manipulating.
So basically, the progesterone is our natural naturally created hormone from our ovaries, and same with estrogen. A progestin is a synthetic hormone, and the progestin itself is what is the contraceptive piece. The estrogen is around just to kind of do some bleeding control. Mm-hmm. So really, you know, when we're trying to sort of pare down how much hormone exposure women are getting, if they want to go with something that's the lowest amount of hormones, we're going to go with a progestin-only method, which there are many. And then we can kind of piece it out from there. Because that is a very common comment I get. I would like to have the lowest amount of hormones possible.
Yeah.
But women are also very focused on their bleeding. You know, who wants to bleed in an unpredictable or unwanted way? And so that's another really important factor when we're deciding, even with low hormone levels.
And the effect of adding estrogen in for people? So when you say bleeding control, what does it typically do for women?
So it will make the bleeding more predictable,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Yeah. And there is kind of a choice inherent in this, mm-hmm. Whether you want to have a cycle, whether you want to have a menses at all, whether you want mm-hmm. to bleed at all, that women also get to sort of
wade through.
Customize.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And I think that's a really common question I get, is that a lot of methods that are out there now will allow for no menstrual cycle at all. And so I think that in our minds, because, you know, we're sort of used to this normal physiologic effect that the period has, that people think that there's kind of this ongoing buildup in the uterus of something that's never able to come
and
out.
And it's just sort of a dam or
the floodgates will open at some point. But in fact, it's entirely the opposite of that. So that constant level of progestin is like a sort of a flat line. So basically it's keeping that uterine environment exactly the same all the time, rather than allowing the changes that we would normally see in the sort of ups and downs of our menstrual cycle hormonal flow.
And do you feel like there is a kind of a pro and a con for not having a period?
You know, if you go to these contraceptive conferences, they basically, the message is there's no reason we need to have a period.
Mm-hmm. What's your thought?
Well, I'm kind of on the fence. I think really it's up to the individual. So, mm-hmm. and I see culturally, like I see a lot of Hispanic women and they are very, very attached to their periods.
Yeah.
Like they really
yeah.
want to have a period every month. So,
yeah.
And
it is sort of a defining part of womanhood.
It very much is. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, as far as the absolute need for it, I can definitely see the argument that there's, you know, if we're not creating any buildup in the uterus, there's really nothing we need to shed. But I do agree that women are very, it's a very ritualistic thing
yeah.
that some women are not willing to let go of, which
yeah.
is fine. That's why there's so many options.
That's
out
right.
there.
That's right. So yeah, on that note, let's dive into sort of what's out there and what's mm-hmm. the menu that we all
yeah.
get to choose from.
So you were asking me when we were chatting earlier what my favorite is. And I think my favorite is whatever is right for the person.
Yeah.
I'm really not that attached to any particular method. By
yeah.
far and away, I still distribute more birth control pills than anything.
And do you think that's because that's what people want the most, or that's just the most readily accessible and what's funded and what?
I think it's the norm. I think
yeah.
it's, you know, the pill is still just what people know the best. I also think that people feel like they have the most amount of control
mm-hmm.
over using a pill.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really important for some people. But second, I'm looking at my little chart here.
Yeah.
My second most common method that I give out is an IUD.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't give it out. I insert it.
Yeah.
So this is a method that gets inserted into the uterus. We offer two types at the health department. There's one that's a hormonal type that's good for 5 years that you don't have your period because it has a progestin. The other one is a non-hormonal IUD. It has copper in it, and the copper kills sperm. I guess that's a third method we didn't talk about for
mm-hmm.
contraception. So the copper in the IUD prevents sperm motility, and so therefore it kind of kills off the sperm. That's a 12-year IUD. And so, you know, for someone that's wanting something that's non-hormonal and they know they don't want to have kids for a long time, then that's a great method for them. Now, because I'm mentioning amount of years, and I always want to make it really clear, that doesn't mean you have to have it in for that long. If you get an IUD and you have it for 6 months, then great. It was a great method for you for 6 months. But it can be useful. And actually, these IUDs that are good for five, they're I'm sure in the next few years are going to be extended to a 7-year.
Yeah.
So they're really finding that their efficacy is much longer standing than they're originally studied for.
Yeah. And with IUDs, people have a choice. Like you said, there's hormonal, there's non-hormonal. Mm-hmm. One of the questions I get very often is if someone knows that they want contraception for 8 months and mm-hmm. then they want to get pregnant, mm-hmm. a question I often get is how long do they need, when
What's
do they
the
need to plan to remove
effect?
It
yeah,
to
yeah.
get things back to normal to then get pregnant?
Yeah. So I think with basically all methods other than Depo, Provera, which is an injectable form, that fertility returns very quickly. As we were talking about earlier, we really metabolize hormones quickly. So
yeah.
the reason you take a birth control pill every day is because you metabolize those hormones every day.
And if you miss it,
right.
how it's so important that you need to,
right.
to follow the instructions
yourself.
To keep it.
Yes,
yeah.
yes. So I think that resuming fertility is really a kind of not an issue. Now, that's yeah. not to say that you don't maybe have fertility issues on top of the fact
sure.
that you're taking birth control.
Sure.
So, it's not a guarantee, but usually, theoretically, and studies show that people resume fertility very quickly.
And one distinction I want to make for the listeners is that difference between taking something systemically, meaning you're taking it orally, mm-hmm. it's going in the bloodstream and it's distributing the hormones throughout mm-hmm. the body, versus something local.
Right.
Like a vaginal ring.
Right.
Or like...
So the IUDs and the vaginal rings would be the two that would be in that category. Everything else is going to be more systemic. So birth control pill, there's also patches, which you adhere to the skin. And the implant is another one, another what we call long-acting reversible contraceptive. So IUDs fit in that category, as well as implants. So this is a small rod, kind of the size of a matchstick, that gets inserted under the skin. It's a 3-year method. It's a progestin-only method as well. And it's been really popular with teenagers, especially because mm-hmm. I think they're interested in a long-acting method, because as a 15-year-old, you don't want to
have
get
children
pregnant
for a while. Sure.
And it doesn't involve having to do anything with a speculum or their vaginas or,
That's right.
areas that maybe are less comfortable to wander into at that age.
Yeah.
So it's been that's been another, that would be my third one on the list.
Yeah.
As a popularity.
And with that one, can you walk us through, they come into the office and you insert?
Yeah. So basically when you come to the health department, I think one of the things I also always counsel my teens on is the fact that when they come, we don't have to do an exam. So I think that was something that happened a long time ago, and maybe even the moms of some of these teenagers are saying, you might have to have an exam, or
right.
and none of that's true anymore.
Yeah.
So, we basically have a conversation is what
yeah.
we do. And
yeah.
then for an implant, basically there's a numbing agent that I inject into the skin. And so that numbs up the area where the implant itself goes. And then it's this slick little device that kind of injects it under
like
the skin.
Like doing an ear piercing.
It is like an ear
yeah.
pierce, yeah. And then to take it out, I do have to, make an incision with a scalpel and kind of identify it under the skin. But I've never had a problem getting them
yeah.
out. So they come
yeah.
pretty easy.
And let's talk for a second with the hormonal methods that there was, when was the Women's Health Initiative? That was in... There was a huge study
right.
done back. This was when I was in medical school.
Yeah.
I don't even remember that far
yeah,
back.
Yeah.
But in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. there was a huge study that kind of put some heat on using hormones in women.
Right. And they were studying more hormone replacement, like menopause,
yes,
as opposed
exactly.
to contraception. But go ahead.
Yeah. So the question that is still in everyone's mind, I think, is just this idea
safety.
Of, can you assure me mm-hmm. that using estrogen and progestins
mm-hmm.
are relatively safe, when you're weighing the cost benefit
yeah.
to health?
So and that's a great question. And I, like with anything, there is risk.
Yep.
And so certainly if you have an active ongoing breast cancer, you're not going to be getting any of these methods.
That's right.
But breast cancer is one of the things we do see a slight uptick on as far as risk goes. But it also, significantly lowers our risk of uterine and ovarian cancer. Because the fact that we're suppressing ovulation and we're also kind of modifying that sort of growth shed cycling of the uterus,
right.
it really does lower that risk. It also lowers the risk of us having uncomfortable periods and,
mm-hmm.
PMS and a lot of other things that are much more invasive into our daily lives as opposed to not. So,
and let's talk for a minute. That's an interesting idea, that overlap between contraception versus using hormones to manage
therapeutically.
Therapeutically,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah. And I would say that you know, I get a decent amount of new patients at the health department that are young, that are coming, that are not sexually active, that are interested in modifying their periods. Because, I mean, as we can, you know, us people that are have periods can maybe remember, as those, you know, early years in menstruation can be challenging. There can be a lot of cramping and a lot of emotional issues and just having to deal with, like, all the products you have to use. So the appeal of, you know, modifying that, making it lighter, or even helping periods to go away is something that's a very realistic sort of inspiration for people to come and get contraception.
And while we're talking about also... sort of a using hormones, and obviously people use them in a lot of different ways therapeutically, or some by choice if they're transitioning gender. And you and I were touching earlier on the idea of when you're using hormones to change gender, that they are not necessarily contraceptive. So really choosing something that works for you within your identity that feels comfortable and good, but still honoring that a female who's transitioning to a male still needs to actively prevent pregnancy if they do not want a pregnancy.
Yes. And I think one of the things that was driven home to me at the conference that I just attended was that, you know, women that are transitioning to male, or females that are transitioning to males, a lot of times are using testosterone. And testosterone can be what we call teratogenic, so it can affect the growth of a fetus in a very adverse way. And so, you know, not only is it potentially, like, really traumatic to get pregnant when you really are not feeling like you are, you know, embodied in that gender, but then having to decide what to do about, you know, a potentially problematic pregnancy is another decision.
Which is great for people to know that effect of testosterone, just if you are taking it during the transitioning, that being
really
aware.
Yes, for sure.
That makes sense. Let's talk for a minute about the Nuva ring, because I think not everyone knows about that. Will you tell us a little bit about that as an option?
The Nuva ring is a vaginal method, and I really like this method because it's flexible, and literally, like, the actual thing itself is flexible. So it's a ring. Like, if you were to put your forefinger and your thumb together, it's generally about that size, and it's like a plastic, silicone plastic. So it's very, like I said, flexible, and that's impregnated with hormones, both estrogen and progestin, and you insert it vaginally, and basically you can either use it and have a period, so you can leave it in for, you have to have it in for 21 days, but you can have it in for longer, so you can leave it in for 21 days, take it out, have a period, and put a new one in, or you can use it continuously, meaning that you could have it in, and then just, like, today's the 27th, so the 27th of every month is the day you change from one to the next, and that way you're skipping your periods, basically. But the fact that it has this, you know, long viability as far as its amount of days, you could have, like, a 2-day period. You know, there's so many ways you can use it and be flexible with it. So,
and it is a little bit of a put it in and forget about it,
method
for a certain amount of time versus a pill where you're taking it each day.
And I get, you know, some people are not into the vagina aspect of it. Like, they're just not comfortable, you know,
having
inserting
to insert something
and removing something themselves. But, for women that are, I think that they really have very few side effects. It's a very low dose method because it's, like you're saying, more local acting. It's not completely locally active, but fairly much so.
And tell us that when you use something local, so an IUD with progestin, for example, or the vaginal ring that has the estrogen and progestin, do you see it in the blood? Does it get absorbed? And can you actually measure it in the blood as an increase?
I would say an IUD, probably not, but possibly with
the vaginal
ring. Yeah. But low, very low. I mean, if you were to compare someone that has a ring in to someone that's taking a birth control pill, it would be apples and oranges, the difference of hormone levels.
Yeah.
Our vaginas have a lot of hormone receptors, so it's a really great place to absorb hormones.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really like this method. I think it's an easy one to use, and it's really effective. And
does it slow the periods or stop the periods for women, or does it? Yeah.
Yeah, it sure does, especially
and
if you're using it continuously.
I know in the world of IUDs, there's some options out there in terms of levels of progestins in it that where women, just to put it out there, and maybe I know at the health department you guys
just do the two
kinds, but in the world of IUDs that there's, you can kind of customize a bit more where if you want a regular period, you can still have a low enough progestin level that you can still have a regular period.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah. And any other, the depot shot is one that you kind of mentioned.
Yeah, so Depo-Provera is a every 3 month injection that you come to the clinic to get. It's one of the higher dose methods that we have. So there are more side effects associated with this particular method.
Such also, as what?
So I think there's a far-ranging amount of side effects from any birth control method, but they just are more intense with Depo. So mood changes, bleeding irregularity, especially when initiating the method, as well as there's bone loss associated with Depo specifically. That's not a side effect you see with any other method other than Depo.
Why do you think that is?
Well, it's such a high level of progestin that it just stops the sort of
estrogenic effect on the bone.
And the thing with Depo is that you can't, I mean, I can't take an injection out once I put it in. So, you know, you have to really kind of be aware of these potential side effects. And then a weight gain, I should also mention, is a potential side effect of any method, but with Depo, it's significant. It can be significant.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can't use this particular method with women that have, you know, a high BMI of over 35, I think.
Mm-hmm. Because of the weight gain aspect.
Mm-hmm. But yes, and also because we have to have it as a muscular injection, and so sometimes with women that have a lot of body fat, it's hard to actually access the muscle.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And you were just at a conference, the contraceptive technology conference.
Mm-hmm.
Anything new and exciting on the market?
There's some fun stuff, and not a lot of this stuff is actually in FDA trial yet, but
something that we might see in the next 10 years in the world of contraception.
So one of the things I should mention also is that there's a couple of great phone apps. One is called Clue and one is called Glow. And these are apps that will help you to remember your method. Also, they have a lot of fertility awareness options in there with them as far as people that are wanting to achieve pregnancy.
Apps help manage where you are in your cycle, but also if you're taking something, remembering when you're taking it.
They'll remind you, exactly. Yeah. There is a birth control pill that's coming out with a different estrogen. So all birth control in general, no matter what you're using, has the same estrogen. And so they're kind of coming out with a newer, friendlier estrogen on a pill. And then there's this vaginal gel that is actually, I think this one is in study, and it's called Amphora, and it's a contraceptive gel, which also potentially can prevent gonorrhea and chlamydia and people that have chronic BV, which is a normal bacterial, normal vaginal bacteria that sometimes for people can overgrow and become really problematic. For men, there's still not a lot. These are the ones that are definitely not in any kind of FDA trials, but there are these what they call precoital, so precoital means before you have sex, pills that would help you to inhibit the motility of the sperm or prevent the sperm from being formed in the first place. Apparently men just don't tolerate the side effects the same as women. It's really what it comes down to. Mm. So the side effects that tend to come up for men are less tolerable.
Are more
for
troublesome.
For whatever reason. Yeah. Yeah.
And you make a good point, which I think we alluded to, but it's really important to say again, is that one of the hard things when you're dealing with reproductive health is that you can have contraception, meaning I don't want to get pregnant and I'm going to use a method not to. But a lot of those methods do not provide protection against sexually transmitted diseases.
Correct.
So oftentimes you do have to use two separate tactics and two separate tools.
Always talking to my teens about how condoms are going to continue to be a really important thing in their sexual activity because they're going to be the one thing to protect them from sexually transmitted infection.
Yeah.
And then I also really just can't leave without saying something about abstinence, because that is something that's 100%.
Yes.
And I think that no matter where people are in their sort of sexual lifetime, it's always okay to say no and say, I'm not ready with this either particular relationship or this particular moment, that you always have that right.
Right.
And I mean, I think we're learning about that a lot right now, just in general media, but I think it's really a drive home that you can't get infections and you can't get pregnant if you don't have sex.
That's right. And that you always have that ability
have that
to say no and that boundary to be honored.
Yep.
Yeah.
For sure.
So if people want to find out more about County Health or make an appointment or get hooked up with that or get questions answered, what's the best way for
them
to contact?
So there is a website, but I think the easiest thing is just to call our clinic. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty easy phone number. So it's 503-325-8500. And I'm there on Tuesdays and Thursdays, although the clinic in general is open 5 days a week. You know, it's a government thing, so they're 9 to 5 every day.
And they call to get appointments. They don't
Correct.
Just
Yeah,
stop
there's
in.
Not walk-in.
Mm-mm. Got it. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Allie.
Yeah, thanks for being on this. And you've been listening to Light on Health on Coast Community Radio with my guest, Dr. Tracy Erfling. Very special thank you to Joanne Rideout, who's engineering, because without her, I would not have a show. I don't know how to work one of those buttons back there. It's my hope that we have enlightened and empowered you to take one tiny step forward towards your own radiant health. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks.